Hello, Leo, and welcome to Easy Does It, your 2025 mid-year reading from Quantum Waves. I'm Eric Francis Coppolino here with you for an update of your astrology, a whole new reading taking us well beyond the awakening and well beyond reckoning, the spring reading. I'll have some clues about 2026, but mostly I want to catch us up to the stunning and radical changes in the environment that have occurred since last we spoke. It has been an incredible year. While I did a thorough review of the astrology ahead of 2025, including a careful chronology, I didn't really get the intensity of all of these gas giant planets changing signs just within a few months. All four gas giants coming on the heels of Pluto changing signs, that basically is every slow mover in the entire solar system. But before I get to the astrology, I want to just comment a little bit about the times that I think that we are in. I know that living in Western civilization always seems like it's just too much all at once and really a little bit weird, and like we're always just so stretched. But the digital world has been an unusual place for its entire duration, and now we are living under basically digital on steroids, which is this complete onslaught of this thing that's falsely being called artificial intelligence that has, and I have not heard anyone else comment on this, ramped up exponentially since Trump took office in early 2025, earlier this year. Everyone's just playing this off, and Trump is, doing all of his antics and signing a million executive orders. And today he signed an executive order determining that burning the American flag is a federal offense of some kind, even though the Supreme Court said that it's legal and that it's an expression of free speech, and even though all Boy Scouts know there's only one way to dispose of an American flag, which is to burn it, and there's all this controversy, and meanwhile there is like weird stuff happening in cities and all of that. It is my perception that this is all a distraction. It is all a stage show. It is all a burlesque act, basically. And the nature of the burlesque act is to conceal from us the importance, the nature, the impact of what is going on in the technology environment. And I don't expect that you've, taken media studies and read 10 books by Marshall McLuhan and listened to 50 interviews, but I am and have learned to proceed from the premise that the technology environment is the environment in which we live. It used to be cities and suburbs and towns and rural areas and grass and trees, a little bit of concrete. And as time has evolved, the media environment, meaning the overall technology environment, has become absolutely, totally, incomprehensibly overbearing 24/7. How much anxiety do you feel when your phone is running low on batteries? I just had an experience of my phone running low on batteries, and I don't really know where any of my like lightning port cables are, and they always seem to go bad, and I wanted to throw the effing thing at the wall. Realizing I just had one of those moments, and I'm sure you've had these moments too, when you realize you are caught in something. You are in the midst of something that could be described as a web, and we were introduced to it as a web, the World Wide Web. But now it seems like it's like this thing in a cartoon where, like, no matter how you move, you are more entwined in it. And there's not so many friendly people here to tell you about, something you might want to hear about to help you feel good about yourself, to help you make decisions, to help you see some potential for the future. In fact, most of what exists on the internet and the presence of the entire AI environment itself is about demonstrating to us that we are all worthless, useless, bad people, And the acceleration of time is incredible, and everything is in debt except for, OpenAI, which is a nonprofit organization worth $500 billion. And we are caught in the middle of all of this. And my concern is not about the technology environment itself, but rather what it's doing to you and to me, how we are being made to feel about ourselves, our sense of the possibilities, our sense of potential, our sense of having any worth at all. And now we're in this moment where we are being told every single day that you and I are going to be replaced by software applications. Well, who is the world for? Who is this planet for? Suddenly, this is being done to us by a bunch of people who are completely beholden to, sold out to the robot. They belong to the robot. All these billionaire guys, they think they're very wealthy, and in some respects they are, and they can have private security teams and private drivers and private this and that and the other thing, private islands and private chefs and the whole bit of private. And we're all supposed to cheer along because capitalism is such a good thing. In reality, they are prisoners of the robot, and they're trying to make us prisoners of the robot, and they have very nearly succeeded. And what astrology is, in my view, is a study in how humans relate to the environment. The planetary positions are pictures of the environment. They're also pictures of internal movement. It helps to have the natal chart for that, but we do get some clues about internal movement sometimes from the solar chart, which I'm going to bring into the conversation in a second, that are that are so obvious, that it's about inner movement, and we are in one of those moments right now because of the astrology that is passing through your fellow fire sign Aries, as well as your nearby air sign Gemini, and most significantly, your opposite sign Aquarius, where Pluto has been working its way in since 2023 into 2024, over 18 months. It is still very new, very recent, and we have only gotten a little whiff of what this Pluto and Aquarius thing is going to be about. But I'm going to place some very strong emphasis on this for you because of the fact that Pluto is in your opposite sign, Aquarius. Okay, so the way that I see my role here is as a mediator between you and your environment, and your environment is described in this little game of life by the astrology. And astrology is played on a game board with 12 squares. I'm going to use an empty one for the moment. This is a blank solar chart. I know that's supposed to be Gemini, but I put Uranus up there. Actually does belong there, but it should be more on a little bit into the wheel on the Gemini. But that's close enough, and I've got Uranus in the right place. And so the solar chart is called that because it assumes that your sun is in the sign Leo. Now, I work for sun, rising, moon, and Chiron. So my solar charts have an expanded purpose, which is to bring in four different, I'm just going to tip this down a little bit, four different elements that you can read for, but the orientation is always on Leo. And we know that because we've got Leo right here on the eastern horizon. That's how it works. Astrology is flipped. South is up there, north is there, west is there, and east is there. It's opposite for some reason, which I have not been able to figure out. I'm sure that one of you actually knows why that is so. And so when we look at the Leo solar chart, we get a concept of what Leo is that does not require any planets. This is the most interesting thing about the solar chart. And if you ever loved a Linda Goodman book or the Patrick Walker horoscope and the Jonathan Kaner horoscope, because he understood this too, what makes a sign distinct are not just the qualities of the sign. For example, Leo is ruled by the sun, It's a fixed sign. It's a fire sign. Okay, that's all very well and good. But it's all about where the other signs shake out in the context of the houses. And so for Leo, Cancer is in the 12th house. For Cancer, Gemini is in the 12th house. Let's just give one more example. For Aries, Pisces is in the 12th house. And so when you change the reference sign on the horizon, you change everything. And this is why it's all in the houses. That's what my class on the houses is called. And my best article published in the Mountain Astrologer, it's all in the houses. And so we start here, and we know, for example, that Leo has Cancer in the 12th and Virgo in the 2nd, and that you have Taurus way up top of your chart. And so when this provides the basic fundamental structure of the sign, the concept, the archetype of Leo. So when you say Leo, you're also saying Taurus in the 10th. When you say Leo, you're saying Sagittarius in the 5th. And the houses are where we find our topics. The signs more describe a style, and they talk a little bit about location, physical locations of the activity, but for the most part, the physical location is a matter of the house. Just like a house is a physical location, or a room in a house is a physical location. We could describe this as a mansion with many rooms, or each of these is a mansion of heaven. There's all kinds of fancy spiritualist ways to talk about this, but I think of it as each of these little areas is its own environment with its own purpose. It's an environment with a purpose, a certain feeling, location, and you're likely to find certain people there and or certain circumstances in each one of these houses. And the lines themselves, which are called cusps, even though that's not exactly really the right word, but we'll call them cusps. There's another definition of cusp. I don't need to get into it now. Is that there's a transition area. The cusps represent a transition area. And the transition areas are all very interesting. And the transition areas are also active this year. Big time. Particularly the Taurus-Gemini line and the Pisces-Aries line are hot right now. Let's go into that in the next slide. So here's a super simple version of your solar chart. I've got a more complicated version beneath it, but let's just start with this simple version. So here's Leo. Your natal sun is here or somewhere in this range. And so we orient the ascendant, the hypothetical ascendant to the east on Leo. And then we have information. So I'm going to go over the planets that are visible in this chart. And then we're going to take a look a little bit deeper. So I think that really from a standpoint of environmental impact on you, the most important thing going on for you is Pluto in Aquarius. And Pluto in Aquarius made a very unusual 18-month run into changing signs. I mean, even Sedna, which takes 11,000 years to go around the zodiac, went into Gemini, back into Taurus, and right into Sedna. That's it. But Pluto, which only takes 248 years to go around the sun, went into Aquarius, went back, went into Aquarius, went back, and then finally stayed in Aquarius right there in November of 2024. So it's a new factor. And we are still in the first year of Pluto in Aquarius to stay, and it's going to be there for about 17, 18 more years. It enters Pisces when I turn 80 in 2064. 63, 64. It's a one-year transition in also. So for the foreseeable future, you have Pluto in your opposite house. This is Pluto in Aquarius in itself is a very interesting sign of the times. One of the things about Aquarius is that it represents groups. Another is it represents the technology environment. The little wavy lines are like waves of energy, like electricity or radio waves. And what that has to do with groups is kind of interesting, but it turns out that we find out when Marshall McLuhan goes into business, that the groups implied by Aquarius are the product of the electrical environment. Now, I assure you, that family did not know an astrologer till the day they met me. They may have known one, but they didn't ever talk about astrology, but I was impressed that they took it seriously. They took me seriously because I said they knew that I had a handle on Grandpa's work, etc. And skipping that part, what McLuhan said was that when the electricity is turned on, society de-individuates and becomes tribal. And the very inventions that represent that turning on the energy, i.e., Thomas Alva Edison, inventor of the light bulb and founder of General Electric, was an Aquarius. Just to give one little teeny example, you turn the juice on and people tribalize. They de-individuate. This is an absolutely perfectly stunning vision of Aquarius, and I have not had this thought until right here, right in this moment. I'm going to write down the time. It's 4:58 p.m. 4:58 p.m. on 8/26. It's called the Aquarius Electric Orrery. And this is how I do it. It's like I teach, I talk, whoa, ideas come out. And so Aquarius represents, first of all, it's your house of relationships. That's what the seventh house is the house of relationships. You're here, your partners are there, your environment is there. That's basically what's going on. But Aquarius represents the confrontation between the individual and the group. That is the essence of the sign Aquarius. It's sometimes said to be the sign of groups, but we all know that Aquarius is the sign of weirdos and people who are very individualistic and who are very distinctive and who have to be their own person in a really weird way, and they're gonna do what they do, and they're gonna have their own politics, and they can't really be on the left, and they can't really be on the right. You know, my father is, he's still around. He's an Aquarius, and he in the day he was a Barry Goldwater conservative. Barry. Anybody know what that is? Anybody here old enough to know what a Barry Goldwater conservative is? You're really, really conservative. But when he was a college professor at Pace College, he was willing to be the faculty advisor for the ultra left Students for a Democratic Society. And he's like, "What's the difference? I'm not here to judge your politics. I'm just here to get you the key and you do whatever you want in the meeting." No, they didn't want him because he was a conservative. SDS didn't trust him. My father, the arch conservative, trusted Students for a Democratic Society and was willing to serve. So that's Aquarius. You can't really predict it. And by the way, that tends to be the kind of people that you attract. There's other qualities to Aquarius. Let's go back one step. So it's the sign of groups, and it's the sign of these really individualistic people. When you make that into a whole thought, you find out that Aquarius is the sign of the relationship between the group and the individual. Ta-da! I think I'm the first person to say that. I think I'm the first astrologer to state it so succinctly, because that contradiction always bothered me. Is Aquarius the sign of the group, or is Aquarius the sign of the individual? How can it be both? Ah, it's the sign of the relationship between the group and the individual. This makes perfect sense. And we are in a moment in time when the group and the individual are being pitted against one another rather viciously. We saw this play out in 2020 during the 2020 crisis, when you couldn't be the, well, it was tough, but you might have done it to be the only one not wearing a so-called mask. Doesn't the concept of a mask seem completely fucking absurd now? That viruses, if they exist, are like, you know, basically a molecule, and yet you're gonna, you know, the weave on a mask is like this big, you know, for a virus that can just kind of like fly right in between it. And we were all forced into wearing, or many of us forced into wearing masks in 2020. And what that did was it pitted the individual against the group. That is a negative connotation of Aquarius. That is a, let's say, a toxic inflection of Aquarius. The individual versus the group. There's a couple of other inflections as well. One of them is the individual stands up to the group. So you have the group trying to pressure the individual. Then we have the individual standing up to the group. Don't take that two ways. And then we have, with Pluto, this transformation element, this element of being of transforming from one thing to another. And there we have the concept of the individual changing the group. The presence of one person in the room changing, changing the entire expression of the group, or being involved in some form of a group initiation, which we could say is like theme 3.5 of Pluto and Aquarius, group initiation. Now, try as I may, I can't really come up with too many examples of group initiations, except for rock bands that manage to stay together through tremendous artistic changes. And they tend to run their course pretty quickly. And I'm still looking, and I'm still eagerly awaiting someone to get hold of me, and if I see this, I will answer in a second. What is an example of an individual leading a group in actual permanent transformation, or the group goes through an initiation and it sticks, meaning it's not over in 5 minutes. It's not over in 2 years. It is actually a transformative experience. I can't think of any, but we better get the hang of that, because right now the energy of groups in our society is very, very toxic. Five perfectly nice individuals can become one real asshole of a group. In fact, three perfectly nice individuals can become a real asshole of a group, with where they can suspend the rules of humane treatment and just kind of do anything they want. And the problem with that is, the problem with groups is, groups of any kind is, there's no accountability. Individual accountability, that's the only accountability there is. If you say, well, the group did it, well, it was him. No, it was him. No, it was him. It was her. It was them. Well, anybody but you, right? So that's, hiding within a group is the perfect way to be able to completely diffuse accountability. Now, what is this doing in this part of your chart, in this very sensitive part of your chart where all of your relationships exist? And not only that, not only is it about your relationships, it's also about the world in which you walk around, the world you live in. The seventh, I think, again, I'm the first astrologer to say this, it's not just about relationships. It's about your relationship to existence, workaday, ordinary, look around, existence generally. It's not the third house, which describes local environment and the town and maybe your communication style. The seventh has a much more general feeling. It is kind of a worldview. I mean, for example, I have Capricorn. I'm Cancer rising. I have Capricorn on the seventh house. I live in a world where governments are real, and where I look around and I see the structures in society, and I'm evaluating whether the road signs are accurate, and I've talked to the highway commissioner in my new town, and I've met the sheriff in my new town, and I've introduced myself to other government officials, and I've gone to many government meetings in the course of my life. I live in a world where there are structures and orders of society, which I associate with having Capricorn government, the house of sign of government, on the seventh place, and also corporate reality. I've spent much of my life writing about corporate reality. Well, so I walk around and I live in a world that is largely described by these governmental entities and structures. Now, Capricorn is also forests, and there's all kinds of other things about Capricorn, but that is just an example. And I promise you, you probably have never met the highway commissioner, right? You're not going to town meetings. It would never occur to you. Probably not. I mean, this is a special thing that is, I think, associated with Cancer rising. And not all have it, but Also, family structure, very important. Not just family, family structure, family tree, family history. When we put Aquarius on the seventh house, suddenly we're in the house where you are looking out at a world where the group and the individual are relating, and so the politics becomes less about formal structures of politics. What would it be? Formal and informal, right? Aquarius is more informal. Aquarius is more, there is certainly a structure, there are certainly rules, there are certainly plenty that can go wrong, there are certainly consequences, but it is the informal leader. Kind of like, to give a terrible example, in a prison, there's like the chief prisoner, and then there is the warden. The warden is the leader of Capricorn, and the chief prisoner is the leader of Aquarius. Nobody really elected him. Nobody really appointed him. He doesn't draw a government paycheck, but he has close to as much power as the warden because he can, for example, call a strike. There can be the informal head prisoner has all kinds of power that's not official power, but that is supported by this other kind of structure, this other kind of societal structure, a social structure that we find in Aquarius. And so when this is suddenly activated by Pluto, holy shit, there's going to be a lot here. It's going to intensify your relationships. It's going to turn up the heat on your individual partnerships. You are likely to have a sense of deeper, greater, more significant consequences related to your experiences with other people. And it's going to intensify group dynamics. That is to say, the dynamics within groups and the relationship between you and the group. And you may find that any of those modes of Pluto and Aquarius can sort of kind of come for you in the sense of, you know, you may find yourself at odds with a whole group. It could easily happen again where everyone just, you know, sort of believes a certain thing and they're not going to let Uncle Bob come to dinner because he didn't have 16 COVID shots. Well, what do you do? You're just going to go along with it? I kind of don't think you are going to. And if you went along with it in 2020, you're much less likely to go along with it again. But it's going to come up and take a different form. It's going to take the pressure, the social pressure of Aquarius is going to be a different kind of pressure. So you're going to have all the diversity of dramatizations of Pluto in Aquarius. That's just how it is. And you're looking right at it. So you want to be conscious and careful and thoughtful of this, and you want to be aware that this is going on. And there's a real element of tread lightly on your relationships. And you may notice that people around you are maybe getting a little intense on you. They're starting to put pressure on you in certain ways, or you are noticing something that that had been building over the years. And the thing to do with that is to have a conversation. You know, your leadership in conversation and your ability to hold your own center is going to be very important. But with Pluto and Aquarius, you're going to have to learn how to be other-centered, to not be self-centered. Leo has really two modes. There are the incredibly selfless Leos that will just spend their whole life holding the world together. That's the sun is the thing that has the gravity that holds the entire solar system and all the asteroids and all the planets and all this together. And the other kind of Leo is the kind that, gives Leo the bad reputation, which is the kind that is self-centered, that can't seem to get out of being oriented on itself. And this is a time for humility. This is not a time for making big demands on your relationships, like how much money someone should make. But you can say, well, do you want your partner to pay their way in the relationship? Do you want them to practice a policy of fairness in the relationship, well, that is reasonable. And I think that the expectation of a conversation is a reasonable expectation to have, unless you're finding that you are becoming subject to power trips all the time, which is possible. And I suggest you be very thoughtful about that, and that you say to somebody who you think is, got you caught in a power trip, say, what this feels like a power trip. And then you hear what they say. And if it's not a power trip, they're going to say, I am so sorry. I didn't mean to be acting like that. And if it is a power trip, they're going to say, fuck you and the horse you rode in on. And you would be wise to take the cue, because this is a very intense force. It's going to test your relationships. And it's going to test not only your one-on-one relationships, because that's the nature of the seventh, is dyadic pair bonding. It's going to test the nature of your group relationships. And so the question in any group situation is this group something I'd want to be part of? I mean, the old Groucho Marx line is so perfect. I would never belong to any group that would have me as a member. It's a very clever line, and we can ask what he really meant. What he really meant about that. I have a very strong Aquarius chart, and I don't do well in groups. I see the relationship of the group. Right immediately, I sense the group mind. And the group mind tends to be a douchebag. And so you have to ask yourself, is this a friendly group mind? Is this actually accepting? Or is it accepting for the purpose of getting people in and then torturing them in some way? And the them would be you. So whenever you're in a group situation, including any circle of friends or the friends of your friends and partners, I would say that it's perfectly reasonable to ask yourself, where am I? And what am I doing here? This is one of the kind of universal cosmic questions to ask yourself. And you can ask it any time, really. Where am I and what am I doing here? And who are these people? And what's their agenda? It is fair to assume, especially with Pluto moving through your seventh, and with Aquarius on the seventh, and anywhere in life, generally, on this planet, what is the agenda here? And there's always an agenda. But some people tell you what their agenda is, and some people are transparent in acting out their agenda, and some people are, and organizations, are very, very, very good at concealing their agenda, and they will almost always say that it's one thing and do another thing. And so it's crucial that you be alert, aware, and sensitive to these dynamics, that you be paying attention to the group dynamics, that you be situationally aware. When you walk into a room and there's a group of people that maybe don't have a corporate charter of any kind, but when you walk into the room and there's a bunch of people standing there, look around and see what's going on. Open your eyes and be situationally alert. Notice how groups respond to you. What happens when you step in the room? Are you noticed? Does the room go silent? Does the volume increase? Does anyone walk up to you and say hello? Do you feel invited to walk up to anyone and say hello? These are the kinds of things to notice under the extremely intense and apparently nearly perpetual quality of Pluto in Aquarius. Okay, now what else? You know, it's funny, there are several other elements that are similar, you know, similar to this. But let's talk about one that is rather distinct from this, that is mostly about you and your relationship to existence in a much wider sense. And by the way, houses 7 8 and 9 can all be said to be houses that are associated with a relationship to existence, but different types of existence. So let's just quickly go over them for the sake of having like a coherent process of getting into the ninth place. The seventh, generally, the world you walk around in, partners, and interestingly, open enemies. And by the way, if someone declares themselves your enemy, move on. They probably mean it. And don't give people any openings. I know it's tough. And you don't want to walk around in suspicious mode the whole time like a Gen Z person who doesn't believe anything. But listen to what people say, because remember, the seventh is the house of open, as in openly declared enemies, as well as partners, as well as potential marriage partners, as well as the world that you survey when you look around in the empire of the senses, as Sting said. Eighth house, here, let's change colors. The eighth house, this is the environment you enter when you marry someone. That's the relationship contract solidified, and all of the in-laws. So the in-laws, and it's the house of in-laws, so there's a lot of in going on. Think of the, always when you see the eighth house, just imagine all those arrows. Everything's coming in, and it's the house of the in-laws. Okay, so that's generally about contractual obligations, and also power brokering. Eighth house, power brokering, and you've got activity in there. I'll get to it. Wherever I covered it, check recent readings for Nessus and Pisces. That's the topic. I'm not including it here right now because there's a lot to cover. Now let's go to the ninth, which is really the hot spot in the astrology, and we'll circle the ninth in pink. And that's where you have Aries. And your fellow fire sign Aries. And Aries is a very important sign in the astrological pattern. And you'll hear me say this in every single reading and potentially every reading I have done now going back years. I'm developing and working with this, what you might say, plainly obvious theory, which is that Aries is the sign of self, and it is therefore the sign associated with self-actualization. But where Aries lands by house will tell us where and how that self-actualization is likely to happen. For example, if we switch to the sign Aries, it's going to happen right in the middle of one's life. That's it. You're self-actualizing, and that's it. But if you're the sign Cancer, your self-actualization is going to happen up here in house 10. That's really interesting. So it changes, the houses change the context. And where you have Aries, this process, this whole thing about self-actualization, that's in the ninth. And that is your relationship to a much wider existence. It's kind of like you die in the eighth and go to heaven in the ninth. Or you kind of, here it's like, well, you know, you kind of give up these connubial relationships, these sex, death, money, power relationships of the eighth, basically, you know, fucking for money in one form or another, and then you're in the ninth where the quality is spiritual, whatever that means, spiritual. It used to be about the church. There's not so much the church anymore, but the Vatican would certainly be the ninth house. Any church or church organization would be the ninth house. But actually what the ninth house is your relationship to the wider cosmos, your relationship to existence, meaning existence in the sense that is somewhat beyond this world. So if there was a house associated with space aliens, it would be the ninth house. The ninth is also the house of long-distance travel. Sagittarius, the ninth sign, is where we find the center of the galaxy, and then also the kind of drainage pond called the Great Attractor that is the kind of focal point of about 100,000 galaxies that of which our galaxy and the whole local group are part of. So all things ninth and Sagittarius, excuse me, my nose is itchy, all things ninth and Sagittarius represent that which is higher. I don't think of the word that much, but it is the higher courts, higher education, the higher self. The lower courts are going to be sixth house. K through 12, sixth house. Local library, sixth house. University, ninth house. Travel to grandma's house, New Jersey, third house. Travel to grandma's house in Germany, ninth house. So the ninth expands the scale, and it expands the concept of whatever is in there. And guess what? Lo and behold, you have Aries in there. So I keep saying this, and I'll keep saying it till some Leo sends me back an email with smiley faces and hearts saying, you don't need anybody's religion. Your religion is existing in the world as some kind of a representation of deity on Earth. Perfectly a normal concept. And by the way, if you want a really good read, get the original published edition of a book called Stranger in a Strange Land. That is likely to be something kind of like about your religion. Stranger in a Strange Land. Once upon a time, there was a Martian named Valentine Michael Smith. Aries is ruled by Mars, and there we find, there you are as the Martian of Valentine Michael Smith. Okay, I'm back. So there's a lot going on here. There's never been more going on in Aries. In fact, I've left out a couple of things, and there are very important processes going on that are affecting your whole spiritual orientation, which we could say that Aries, well, the ninth generally, and Aries on the ninth is about spiritual orientation. And look at what's going on in this house. There's if we go into the more complex chart, we add two more planets. We have Saturn, Neptune, Borysici, Salacia, Chiron, and Eris. So if you're, the reason I've included the Aries reading is to give you a sense of that, but when you look at the Aries reading, you think, ah, that's not about, that is about my ninth house. When you, the whole Aries reading, the reference reading for this set, is about your ninth house for you, Leo, rising sun, moon, Chiron. But to sum up, you've heard me say, and I began with, and I keep saying with, and I'll eventually be famous for the concept that the spiritual crisis of our time is the crisis of technology. It's not about some kind of like a thing. Do you like AI? Do you have an AI girlfriend? Do you like ChatGPT? Do you let your kid do his homework on ChatGPT and plagiarize from the last 50,000 PhDs that were ever written and scraped by ChatGPT, and then all the racist, sexist, misogynist, psychopathic Ku Klux Klan stuff that also got in. That's not what I mean. Well, it's in there. It actually is in there. Really, the question is, of our times, is that we have had this thing imposed on us that is being touted as God. It's being touted as God. That's what's going on. And it is, not only is it being touted as God, all-seeing, all-knowing, artificial general intelligence. We can come up with a fake term, ADI, artificial divine intelligence. It is actually synthesized God. Yes, ChatGPT figured out what God is and it made a copy of it. And now you too can just text in, hello, artificial divine intelligence, it's me, Eric Francis, calling you, and now tell me, and this is how it's being used. We're not up to AGI yet. There's no AEI, artificial emotional intelligence. There's not AGI, artificial general intelligence. There's just ABI, artificial bullshit intelligence, but people are treating this thing like it's God. This and the entire history of the digital environment and the electrical environment generally represent a kind of a deity descending upon the earth. A deity that is contained in the electrical grid, in the electric field. And now it can tell you to do things. Now, before people commit suicide, they run it past ChatGPT first. And sometimes it says, yeah, jump. And sometimes it says, well, maybe you should talk to your brother about this. Really? A freaking generative pre-trained transformer piece of bullshit software? People are going to this for advice? Yeah. This is the spiritual crisis of our time. And what all of these planets together say, all of them say all together is wake the fuck up from this. None of this is God. Understand the ways in which you have kind of been trapped into falling for the possibility that it may be some kind of God. Hey, but it is omniscient. It is omnipotent. It can hack anything, and it can, you know, read your email and scrape all your photos off the internet and give you spy reports about anything and anyone at any time. It has, except for love, just that one notable exception, it has all of the properties that we've been told over and over again that God has, except for love. But we've been exposed to digital conditions so long that we're all in a glorious rendition now of what's love got to do with it? Or, said another way, who fucking cares about love when you have ChatGPT? Well, you're not going to like having a digital puppy very much. They're just not as squirmy, and they're not as loving, and they're not as adorable, and not as cute, and they don't lick your face, and they don't eat food and like treats, and then they don't get sick and they don't die. But they're not dogs. They're no fun. There's no love. Digital dog spelled backwards is not God. It's artificial God. And so in any event, with all of this activity in the ninth, in Aries, this is a major moment of actual self-actualization for you. In fact, ninth house self-actualization may be the purest form of self-actualization there is, because it's your awakening to your higher being, to this or deeper inner teacher, whatever you want to think of it as being. It's kind of going to be inner teacher. It's not really higher, because it's Aries and these planets are going to take you deep. And the thing to remember is that sex must be involved. There is no self-actualization. There is no spirituality. There is no God as love without humans being able to do the sexual thing that humans do together. In a sense, the ultimate freedom we grant to one another. And now we're all fraught with Me Too movements and various forms of how much money does it cost. And we have a thousand million TikToks of women saying, no, the man has to pay for all the food and all the dinners. After all, I'm a woman, but I'm equal, and I'm superior, and I'm this, and I'm that, and you must be 6 feet tall, and make six figures, and have a six-pack, etc. This is pure digital insanity. There is no love in that dog spelled backwards either, because it's a digital dog. It's a digital concept of relationships. And I assure you, all of these people met on the internet. Okay, speaking of technology environments, couple of more planets. Uranus looks kind of like a robot. Let's hold it up. It's got that kind of robotic, there it is, see where it says next to SED? This kind of looks kind of robotic. It's actually an H for Herschel, Sir William, who discovered Uranus, the first planet discovered beyond Saturn. Very impressive, huh? Sir William and his sister. His sister was a great astronomer, too. He originally engages her Her family wants her to be like a governess and a maid. She's a real small woman, like 4 feet tall. And he engages her as a mirror polisher in his telescope factory, in his personal telescope workshop. And it turns out that she was a first-class astronomer. If you like the stories of unsung women heroes and also the men who help them, right? We need to end this deception that the great women don't have men behind them, because we all believe that the great men have women behind them. Well, I'm telling you something, all the great women somewhere have a man behind them who held the door open. And in the case of, I'm so sorry, I don't remember her name. I'm not going to interrupt the reading, but it was Herschel's sister. It was Sir William's sister. And he believed in her, and he believed that she should be doing things that she wanted to do. And that meant not being stuck being a governess and being a maid. And so it starts with a technical job, and then she winds up, she's got several important discoveries credited to her name. I think comets and asteroids are discovered are credited to her. This is v very impressive. And anyway, that's the H in Herschel. So this is the planet, not surprisingly, of inventions, of technology, of the robot, of computers, of rapid advances and breakthroughs in technology, and also a bit of group quality. So you have Gemini on the 11th house. If we strip away, if we strip away all the planets, which we don't really need, you could write a heck of a book based only on this. You don't need anything. I could write, I bet you, if anybody wants to make me a bet, with no previous notes, just a blank laptop, I could write a 5,000-word chapter on this blank chart in one day, and it would be real good, because that's how much information is contained in the solar chart. And in the solar chart, I should try that sometime. And in the solar chart, you have Gemini as your 11th place. And it happens that Uranus is there. So it really should look like this. Uranus should be here. We can just pretend to cross that out. And this is activating you socially, big time. Big time social activation. And the thing to avoid under the influence of Uranus and Gemini is the technological version of social. The last time Uranus was in Gemini, 1941 to 1949, computer science was born. And this computer sitting on my desk, it's going to seem very quaint and old-fashioned, like a Remington manual typewriter, when Uranus and Gemini is at the end of Uranus and Gemini. That is in about 8 years, from seven to 8 years from now. And meanwhile, it is activating your highly social inclinations. And so I suggest that you take advantage of this, but that you take advantage of this power by using it in physical, in-person situations, preferably local, not going too far. Having all that stuff going on in Aries, or Arias, as my German girlfriend used to call it, is going to take you far as it is. But you don't need that. You don't need to go far with Uranus in the 11th in Gemini. You're going to find all the cool parties right in your neighborhood. You're going to find the social events, the art openings, the cool social events. And it doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't matter if it's like the school cupcake sale, or it's the pride parade, or the car show, or all the million kitsch things that hopefully you have in your version of America, which I've kind of gotten used to, though they canceled the Memorial Day parade finally because nobody cared. Doesn't matter what it is. What matters is that you bring your body there and you be social and you talk to people. Okay, two more things. Two more things. Just versions of the chart. This is a new trick for me to use different versions of the same chart. I might have another Leo I have another Leo one here somewhere. I don't know, but I'm getting to love making these charts, and I'm the only one who does it. I think that's pretty cool. I mean, they're pretty beautiful. All right, so, and anybody who wants one, write to me. Anybody who gets, like, a good subscription, I will send you the original of one of these. I have hundreds of them, and I'll pick a special one for you. You know, your rising sign or something like that. So just keep that in mind. 12th house, Cancer. 12th house, Jupiter in Cancer. Ah, this is interesting. This is protection. This is protection from fear, protection from the unknown. It is a beacon in the darkness of the 12th place, and it is your ability to find yourself spiritually in the dark. In the dark. Bear that in mind. Another really, really important thing going on for you is the presence of this thing called Varuna in Leo. So Varuna is the official name of Varuna is 20,000 Varuna, written as such. 20,000 Varuna. They when the astronomers give a planet one of those round numbers, it's an honorific. It's like Sir Varuna. They had reserved the number 10,000 for Pluto, and the people who were objecting to Pluto being demoted to minor planet passed on it. Pluto could have been 10,000 Pluto. Now it's 134340 Pluto. One of the early minor planets. So anyway, Varuna, 20,000 Varuna, is telling us that this is a very important discovery, and Varuna is in Leo. Long-term visitor in Leo. There's other things in Leo, too. There was just a very intense Mercury station direct in Leo. However, what Varuna is saying is that what you want to emphasize is your inherent equality. Now, there are times when your inherent equality means that you have to stand up to people. And there are times when your inherent equality means that you stand on level ground with people and you collaborate and cooperate. And then there are times when your inherent equality means that you stand down, that you do not challenge them, you do not need to stand up to them. Can mean a diversity of different things. But the thing to remember is it's about inherent equality. And the other thing, and I will end on this note, that Varuna is about the keeping of contracts. It is about the keeping of commitments. Keeping of commitments. I'm going to add one last thought, and I'm going to get into this more in the annual edition. The Hunger Games group in the sixth means your most important healing process is around your family. And it doesn't mean you have to bring your family into therapy. But what it does mean is to focus on the healing necessities created by your involvement with your family, your family background. What basically what they did to you and the condition in which you were raised. So remember that if you're feeling like you've got a problem, whether it's a medical problem, a spiritual problem, a psychological problem, any kind of problem, remember to check in with family patterns, back to your great-grandparents, and the origin story, and the chances are there was somebody in there who wasn't too friendly, who was kind of the person who would take advantage of the whole situation and squander their second chances and had no moral framework. The person with no moral framework is likely to be the weirdo who didn't care about right and wrong. No moral framework. Ixion is not about being immoral, violating your morals, or violating community standards. Ixion is about living in the complete absence of a moral framework. That is a pretty clear identikit. Following me? Who, you ask in your life, who not only did the wrong thing, but acted as if there was no difference between right and wrong? And the other thing is alcohol. Study the influence, the impact, the multi-generational deal associated with alcohol. Okay, I'm going to wrap up on that. I will be back with the 2026 annual edition, which will be in writing and in video. I couldn't sustain a separate written reading for these. I just couldn't do it. You know that I do whatever I can do. So I have beefed up the video readings, and we've added a total of 4 years of annual editions to each one. Start at the beginning. Go back 4 years and read your way forward. They're in PDFs. Print them out. If you want an astrological education for, like, no money, only love and work, print out all four of those readings, make a little binder notebook, read them, annotate them, get one of these pencils, and you will see these post-COVID years kind of flash by before your eyes in slow motion with the miracle of talking leaves. Before I sign off, I want to thank you for being a Planet Waves customer, a Planet Waves subscriber. If you're a subscriber, if you're not, please consider subscribing. It is the air is getting thin, and I am doing my best to uphold a solid product which requires basically my total devotion and that I have a team around me, because I cannot handle the technicalities myself. We're in the middle stages of developing a new website. We should have that by the end of the year. It's gotten a little bit delayed, like everything this summer. It's partly why this project is delayed. I was in like 20 design meetings for this website. But subscribing is so very important. Please share this work, share this YouTube. You can just share the YouTube, send people back to me. You know, if you love Planet Waves, if you're watching this reading and you're thinking that this is pretty good, I've never seen astrology like this. I didn't know. If you know my work, maybe you know. If you're new, maybe you didn't know. Also, I watched this a couple of times, and there's should be audio. Try watching without looking at me. Just listen to it go by. It's a whole different thing. All right, signing off from the Harshaw House in the Catskill Mountains of upstate New York. Please send to your dog, your cat, your kitten, your puppy, your horse, your donkey, your bird, hamster, or gerbil love from Francis of New York. Lots of love. Bye for now. We'll be right back.